to Filler Podcast. My name is Jason Kotarski.
I'm Andy Lennox.
And we're here to bring you goodness in 20 minutes-ish. We're not quite good at stopping at exactly 20 minutes. And then there's the rock and roll intro we can't go without. So, but without further ado, this is episode 12. Did I say that already?
Yes.
Okay, well, just so you know,
we have some special guests.
And we're very excited. They live right down the road from us, and we bribed them to we told them if they want to be on the show, they had to drive to Flint, Michigan and play games with us.
Hey, man, no problem. Anytime I get a chance to come to Flint, Michigan, I'm all in. I don't need an excuse.
You're the only one, man. You are the only one.
Everyone else is leaving. I want to be here, baby.
So our guests are none other than Ben Pinchback.
How you doing?
Yeah. And Matt Riddle.
What's up, guys and lady?
So, and lady, the one listener.
The one listener that's a lady.
So if you don't know these guys, if you don't know these guys, they designed Dice Hate Me 2013 Game of the Year with Griffin Eagle, Eagle Griffin Games, called Fleet.
Fleet.
And, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think that, like, playing a game about going fishing is any fun. But this says the guy who designed a game about trucking, right? Yeah. But it's a great, great get card game. I would say it's a little bit longer than a filler, but it meets a lot of our criteria.
We like to say super filler.
Right. Ooh, it's like super filler plus.
Yeah.
If you're
experienced, you can knock it out in 25 to 30 minutes with four players once everyone knows what they're doing. Because basically past the auction phase, you can pretty much go simultaneous on all your launching, captaining, fishing, as long as you trust everybody to know what they're doing. So, you know, it's filler plus-ish.
Yeah, we played it about an hour tonight.
That's opening up a whole new world of games for me to try for the show.
Yeah, great.
It's a super filler.
Yeah. We kind of invented a genre, you know? It's what we do.
I think we'll have to start a new show called 30 Minutes of Filler to cover the super fillers.
We actually had 30 to 45 minutes on the box, I think. Publisher was like, you got to put an hour on there. I'm like, no. It's 30 minutes, we swear. Like,
yeah, we play twice in a lunch hour, really. Yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll give you like 30 to 60. Like, okay. Yeah. 30 to 60 is good, that's fine. Just takes a couple games, then you get there.
Why don't you tell us a little bit more just about the game for those people who have never heard of it, like the two-minute kind of, you know, elevator pitch.
All right, so Fleet is filler plus, like we said. And basically what you're doing is it's about commercial fishing. So it's commercial fishing. What isn't awesome about commercial fishing? So you've got multi-use cards. They're your boat cards. They're your money. And they're your captains. And you're using those to buy licenses. And the licenses allow you to fish or launch boats of a certain type. So like a shrimp license lets you launch shrimp boats. The cool part of the game, though, is all the licenses have powers and abilities. So it's a tableau builder. So as you buy licenses, they go in front of you, and you get that power immediately for having purchased the license. Now, you're also allowed to launch boats that match that license. And as the game wears on, you build your engine up, and you get more licenses, and the powers get better. Or you diversify and get more different powers, and you have all sorts of bonuses as you play throughout the game. So that's how it works. It's fun. We've had, I mean, you know, whatever. It's been amazing. It's really opened doors for us and sold really well and been awesome.
Yeah, you just released the expansion, Arctic Bounty.
Fleet Arctic Bounty, yeah. It's nice. More. It's just more cards, more everything. Yeah. More licenses, more boats, more
the
deck
one thing
cards.
We've been really happy with is how many people are digging the new two-player variant
and
the solo play. We put the solo play in because we worked on the two-player variant, and I said to Matt, I'm like, hey, you know, you're playing against this captain. If you just play against both captains, it's a solo game.
Player.
And we tried it a bunch, and I'm really actually blown away how many people are solo in the game.
Me too.
And it's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, we've had a lot of guys, you know, posting on the boards about playing the solo variant. I'm not a solo gamer. If I'm in a solo game, it's called video games, right? Because I like to, you know, I'm too lazy to set something up and play by myself. But there's so many guys out there that really do enjoy, you know, the analog gaming experience by themselves, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, we've had a lot of questions that we didn't actually think about. Like, people are playing the Epic variant with solo, and they're like, hey, when you guys Epic solo, and we're like, yeah, let us go back to our notes and look at that Epic variant with solo. I'm like, we didn't actually think people would do that, but
right.
It's really awesome that they are. So that's a cool thing.
Yeah. That's Fleet Arctic Bounty, available now. Go buy it.
Awesome. Yeah, it is a really fun game. So check that one out.
You scored, what, about 25, 30 points playing tonight, didn't you, Jason?
I tied with one of the designers.
It was a teaching game.
Yeah, so you were going easy on us. Yeah, is that what it was?
Yeah. Matt always goes easy on everyone.
I do.
It's called always losing, yes. Isn't it?
Yes. He won by proxy.
I won by playing.
Sorry, Tyler.
Our friend Tyler destroyed the game.
What did you think about the game, Tyler?
I was told not to talk.
If you didn't hear that, Tyler was told not to talk. That's good advice. Just kidding.
I was testing him.
So, you know, we got into you've done, that was your first game that was published.
Yep.
And how did this all happen? Like, how did you guys get into this gaming thing? That's always a fun story to hear about people's different journeys into gaming.
Pretty much the same story that a lot of people have. Someone in our group found Settlers of Catan, and we thought that was just the greatest thing ever. You know, we grew up gaming, but we were playing all the Risk and all that type of thing. And once someone found Settlers, we played that for, honestly, like 2 years straight. Mm-hmm. We played that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times. And then at some point, someone in our group found Board Game Geek. And then next thing you know, we own, you know, a couple hundred games each. It's the same old tale.
Yeah, yeah. That story's been told a few times. I think it was literally, I think we went to Take It to Ride, which is, you know, after Settlers, yep. And then pretty much right to Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And Puerto Rico probably was the first game where we're like, holy crap. This is awesome. Like, I mean, I love Settlers. Settlers is great. So let's Take It to Ride. But Puerto Rico was like an experience. I mean, it was just so much going on, and you know, your brain was working, and that was from there on. That opened the door to, you know, all the other games. And then from game design wise, you know, after 2 or 3 years of playing these games, I've popped the story dozens of times. But it's funny because I'm sitting in my cube. Maybe I'd walk over to Ben's cube. He's like, "Oh, so we're going to design a game."
No, I said, "Hey, we're designing a game."
Yeah,
now.
Hey, we're designing a game. I'm like, okay,
what do you got?
Right,
that was what you said.
Yeah, so yeah. So then he gave me the quick. You know, we're at work, so we're diligent employees. So we just stopped discussing it immediately and waited until lunch, of course. But he gave like a quick 30-second breakdown of what his idea was, which was basically, you know, the multi-use cars, which we didn't.
I said, I had this completely original idea that
cars
that do more than one thing.
Right.
There's a million games that do that, but we actually didn't know most of them at that time. Right. You know.
But honestly, though, he had the licenses, the idea of the kind of stacked licenses right away. Like, we're gonna have an auction to buy the good cards, the buildings, the at the time it was gonna be buildings or whatever, you know. And he had this idea to stack those things so that as you bought more of the same type, it made the bonus better, or the diversification by buying the different kinds. So that was an idea right away. So we talked about it for a few minutes, and then that day at lunch, we're sitting at Taco Bell of all places, getting fat, and he just starts laying this paper out and, you know, drawing pictures. And I mean, you know, it took us a year, but a year later, and thousands of iterations and games and tests, you know, there was Fleet. So
the Fleet was your first design?
First try at designing games.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice try.
It was.
They took a page out of the Katarsky book of design. Heartland was my first ever design.
Do it first and do it right.
And then compare everything to the first time.
Yeah. It was interesting. We're going to get to our current Kickstarter in a minute, but you know, I was looking back at all that data, and you know, I remember being in the game designer forums on BGG like 2 days before, like, what should we be doing to spread the word? They're like, you should have been doing this like 5 months ago. Because we didn't know what we didn't know. It's like that saying kind of goes. So, you know, but then looking back at the, you know, KickTrack, right? Everyone's Kickstarter. If you're on a Kickstarter, KickTrack's like it's like Google. You're there constantly. So I went back and looked at the KickTrack for Fleet. And, you know, even though we came in not knowing what to expect and not knowing who knew about the game, you know, we had like, you know, 250 backers the first day, and it funded in about 12 hours, and it was awesome. You know, and it was a 60-day campaign, which is unheard of now.
Wow,
no one does that anymore.
You only do 30, so this is, you know, it was forever. You know, 2 full months and refreshing Kickstarter and refreshing, you know, comments and things, and it was a learning experience, obviously. So then you get to, you know, flash forward a couple of years to Fab. We had like 600 backers the first day. We funded in like 3 hours. I mean, it was, but you know, it was an existing game, so it was much quicker that time. But so coming into Eggs and Empires, which we'll get to in a second, you know, we're kind of back on that Fleet curve again, you know, where we're, the backers are, you know, a couple hundred the first day and a nice little slope downwards, but still maintaining good steam, I guess, early on. So it's an experience. You know, you learn a lot each time you do this.
It's like a different animal every time.
And it is. It's different. It is. Every single time, it's a little bit different.
I mean, even, like, people know you as a designer, but they still want to kind of hang back and see, like, what this project's going to be. What's this game all about? Is it going to have legs, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, you see it with different designers. You know, they'll blow up on one campaign, and then the next campaign maybe is a little slower. So it's each game is its own experience at its own pace. You know, price point has a lot to do with that.
Right.
But, you know, we're really positive right now. We're just, you know, happy with the backer count so far, and it's going great.
Yeah, I mean, not to make this podcast about Kickstarter, but, you know, it's one of those things where no one seems to know anything about anything. You know, each time there's been dozens and hundreds of these things, but no one really knows how to incentivize a backer and how they are attracted to one project and not the next.
It's easy to look at something successful and try to backwards nitpick and say, oh, well, they did this, this, and this, and that's why they're successful. But the real answer is nobody knows. I mean, does anybody really know why one game goes a couple hundred thousand and the next game that's very, very similar, you know, goes for 10? I mean, if people knew, they would put out a $300,000 game every time.
Yeah. So I guess that I think that the key there is, I mean, and I see you guys doing this with your designs, like, just as designers, you just have to put your heart, like, into every game you make.
Yeah.
And you throw it out in the wind and see how it catches. And obviously there's work to be done, you know, with your publisher and just to get the word out and connecting with the right audience. But, you know, if you do that first part, like, love your game and
what
do it
you
right.
said is the best advice you can give a designer is design the types of games that you want to play and that you love. And from there, you just are going to put it out there and see if other people are feeling your vibe. You know, do they like the game that you want to play? And, you know, with Fleet, it turns out a lot of people really, really like the type of game that we wanted to make. But if you aren't passionate about the game and it's not what you love, you're going to lose steam on it. If you get caught up in trying to chase the next fad and just, you know, popularity contest and design a game you're not passionate about because you think it's what people want, that's going to fizzle out. It's going to go nowhere, you know, because your heart's not going to be in it, like you said.
Sweet.
So you mentioned Exit Empires, your current Kickstarter. Can you tell us a little bit about that game? Tell our listeners about how it works?
Absolutely. That is a true classic 20 minutes of filler game.
Back on topic.
Yeah. And that is why I wanted to have you guys on the show. When I saw this game, I knew for sure this was a part of what like our audience would be interested in. So, give us the rundown.
Well, please. That said, in a designer diary we posted today, like one of our goals has always been to make that easy, you know, low barrier to entry game that anyone can play, but is still fun for gamers, is still fun for us. And we weren't sure if we could actually do it. So it was just one of those things we really wanted to accomplish was basically a filler game that we really loved.
With Eggs and Empires, what you're doing is it's 2 to 6 players. So it's got a nice player spread. It takes 15 minutes for 2 or 3 players and maybe 25 to 30 minutes at 5 or 6 players. Now, everything's simultaneous, so the only reason it takes longer is because people have a little more, you know, sometimes a little more thinking. So the way the game works is everyone has a deck of Empire cards. It's full of adventurers, and everyone has the same set of 10 adventurers, labeled 1 through 10. So 1 being low, it's the bard, 10's the hero, he's high. What you're trying to do is you're sending your adventurers up Ridback Mountain, of all places. And
is that near Ridback City?
It
just
is.
A little north.
Right by Ridback Bay.
Just a little north of Ridback Bay.
Different time periods. You know,
so, it's an alternate history, really.
Right, yeah. So you're sending your adventurers up Ridback Mountain to collect dragon eggs, which are VP in the middle of the table. So based on player count, you reveal eggs, and they're either positive or negative. So there's a range of positive VP from, you know, 3 to 15, and a range of negative VP from negative 3 to 10, negative 10. And so each hand, you know, sometimes you may want to try to win the VP, sometimes you're trying to avoid the negative VP. So the 10 adventures, though, what's going to happen is it's simultaneous action. So it's 1, 2, 3 reveal, and everyone reveals the card, and the highest card picks first, the second highest card picks second, and so on. But of course there's a twist, or the game wouldn't be any good. It's that every card's got a cool power on it. So, for example, our favorite power that we love to use as an example is the Shepherd is 3. And 3's power is that he beats 8. So 3 beats 8. 8's the Blacksmith. So if you play a 3, or if I play a 3 and someone else plays a Blacksmith, I choose a card before the Blacksmith does, 8. And then 8 also has a kind of a power that kind of ties into that, where if he is played and doesn't collect an egg, he goes in your score pile and you lose 4 points at the end of the round. So it's kind of like a double. Not only did you kind of get passed up by the Shepherd, if you don't get an egg in the end of it, you're going to lose points at the end. So then there's cards like the Mage. He's 7. He never collects negative cards, negative exploding eggs, face up. So he has the ability to skip over the face up exploding eggs. And
so that's why the game works, is you're never sitting there and it's completely obvious in a non-decision which card to play. Because from your deck of 10, you have three. You draw three, play one, draw back up to three, play one. So you're only going to have three at your disposal, but the amount of decision in there is really, really good because of the powers, it's never completely obvious which card I should be playing because I have to think like, okay, is Andy playing his nine? Because nine's canceled. That's the nine power. Nine is the second best card technically, but if more than one nine comes out, none of them collect eggs. So you're always trying to track who's played their nine, when I can sneak my nine out. And every card down the line has that thought process of, is this the right time to sneak this card in? And it really makes it fun.
Yeah, one of my favorite mechanics is simultaneous selection. I try and put it in everything that I do.
Yeah.
And it just causes that whole level of you're trying to guess what the other people are thinking and outguess each other. And just that enough is enough to sell it to me. So
it also creates those moments, right? And it's not like, you know, everyone, if you go to cons, you see those, oh, people yelling kind of thing. It's not... Those are dice games generally because dice are hosing somebody. But even with the game of Exit Empires, with the simultaneous reveal, you immediately, you know, everyone goes 1, 2, 3, you flip your card over and then you start looking immediately. Oh, you played a 9-2, and it's like, you know, then you start canceling out, and it has that sort of that little bit of stress when you're, oh, did I pick the right card? And then you reveal, and it's like the resolution, and it's fun. It's fun to see if your
when you sneak an 8 through works. And there's no 3s, yes. You're like, all right, right. Yes.
You play your 8, it's safe, or you get your 9 out there for a good card, no one else played their 9, and then there's like a card, the courier, it's a 4, so it's a low card, so it's hard to take an egg sometimes with it. But if you take an egg, and it ends up being an exploding egg, you can give it to anybody you want. So I can win the card and then hand it to Ben immediately, which is what I always hand it to, and regardless of player situation. And that's just another way to kind of, you know, just.
But what Andy said about simultaneous play is perfect because it's a way to get to the higher player counts without downtime.
Exactly.
Right.
So like we learned that from Seven Wonders, you know, you get that up to, you know, 4, 5, 6 players, right? I mean, however many can play that, but there's no downtime. That's the beauty of simultaneous is, especially for a filler game, you can get that player count up without people being bored and sitting around waiting for other people to roll and do another delve for another 20 minutes.
Another thing that I think is a little bit similar too is like you have three things to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
It's never overwhelming.
Yes.
Right.
And like you see that in other really like great filler games where it's like you have one or two or three decisions to make and it's seemingly simple, but the thing that makes it hard is the metagame and everybody thinking about what is he going to play, what is he going to play, and how's that going to affect this seemingly easy decision I have to make.
I completely agree. It's a trade-off too, right? Because in theory, the ultimate strategic way to have would be have all of your cards and be like, okay, everyone has all of their cards, everyone has their 10. Is this the time to play the 10? But like you said, you trade what might be a minute amount of strategy for quite a bit of fun, to be frank.
Yeah.
Because now you're just more AP and you're a little bit overwhelmed and you're not playing as quickly. And
well,
the
plus
three
in a
cards...
filler game, honestly, you don't want a filler game to be completely deterministic.
Exactly.
You need a little randomness and a little flavor in a filler game because if I'm playing it with my mom, I want her to be able to do well still and win. And there's scenarios that evolve with a little bit of randomness. Like, randomness is not a bad thing as long as you handle it the right way and still the game works and it's still fun. So having all 10 cards at your disposal would just be more deterministic and a lot slower, and it just...
Well, you see that with the perfect non-deterministic game chess, or deterministic game chess, where people can't play together because they have different skill levels.
That's right.
It's unplayable as a filler for that reason. I'm good at chess, I can't play with someone who's not good at chess.
Right.
Or vice versa. We also tried to make sure that you could play the game and have fun, but that the person who's paying the most attention or doing the best would still win most of the time. It's not just luck, right? You could actually be somewhat good at it, which is always important to Ben and I in anything we do.
That's, I think that's a great characteristic of a good filler is that, like, it's easy, but, like, it's meaningful decisions.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that it is approachable. Like you said, mom can play it, and gamers can play it and enjoy it too. So we're about out of time here, so tell us just really quickly how much does it cost, where do you get it, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so right now, when you're hearing this, it'll be live on Kickstarter. It's $16 for, you know, a nice pile of cards and some chits and things. It's from Griffin Games, again, which is, we're happy to work with those guys. So head out to Kickstarter, search for Eggs and Empires. If you're looking for the rules, some cool art, it's all there, or on the BGG page for Eggs and Empires. So please check it out. If you have any questions, look us up. I'm Riddlen, R-I-D-D-L-E-N on BGG. Feel free to message me, whatever you guys want. So yeah, please check it out.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show, you guys. We're going to have you guys back again for another episode. So we'll get to dig a little bit more into what is Matt and Ben.
Thanks for having us out.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. So, guys, thanks for listening again. This is the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast. You can subscribe in iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason Katarski.
At Andy_Lennox.
And until next time, we hope you get lots of great games in. Preferably the tiny good ones. Tiny good great. That's the best closer ever. Have a good one, guys. This is Jason Katarski.
This is Ben Pinchback.
Matt Riddle.
Andy Lennox.
And we are Striper.